Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Great to bring in from Pittsburgh our good friend Chris Mack. Chris, how have you been?
Great, Steve. How about yourself?
Doing well. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
Is anybody in that town talking about the 9-7 Pirates, or is it just like nobody really believes?
Well, I mean, look, it's going to take a while before we all, quote-unquote, believe that it's anything more than a really fortuitous start.
Like
but
20, like till 2050?
Yeah. You know, on our show this morning, we actually kicked it around, and we all came up with different dates, you know. Somebody said All-Star break. Somebody else said, you know, middle of June. I said Memorial Day. We're going to have to see more than just 2 weeks. Months, I think, would be a really good sign. And even then, I think this team is built a whole lot more like the 2011 or 2012 versions that collapsed late in the season, so that walked in order to be able to run in 2013, 14, and 15. It is encouraging, though, when the guy you had pegged as your closer comes out and closes games down, when the rest of the back end of the bullpen, for the most part, other than yesterday afternoon in extras, looks pretty good. When the lineup is sustaining itself in the immediate aftermath of O'Neill Cruz going out for the year, when Andrew McCutchen looks like more than just a PR move, he's one of the two or three best hitters in your lineup. When Brian Reynolds continues to produce and not be distracted by the talk of his extension, so there are lots of good signs. But we're Pirates fans, you know. We've been burned before. We're not going to get too high nor too low.
Yeah. Before I get to the football part of it, the house cleaning, with the exception of Mike Sullivan by the Penguins, not surprising. But what did you think of it?
Just what you said, unsurprising that without making the playoffs for the first time in 17 years, that they would clean house. What I think will be fascinating is, and you mentioned Mike Sullivan sticking around and basically leading the hockey operations department in the transition period. He is the most senior person in that department until they hire a new either president and or general manager. So he's going to have a big influence, I would imagine, on how things go in the interim, whether that's 2 weeks or a month or 6 weeks. Hopefully it's done before the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs so that they're ready to launch themselves right into off-season maneuvers as soon as that becomes an option. But what will be interesting is how much influence does he have over the process, and how much influence does Sidney Crosby have over the process? Rightfully so, because he is the face of the league still, as great as Connor McDavid may be, as great as the up-and-coming younger players are in this league. Sidney Crosby is still a 35-year-old pumping out point-per-game seasons. And he is still the face of the franchise. So I imagine he's going to have a little bit of a say in what things look like going forward. The part that worries me is that I believe Sid is a creature of comfort to a certain extent, or a creature of habit, I guess I should say. Comfort comes off in a negative light. A creature of habit in that he likes to have his guys around and some of the same people around, and that may preclude the level of change that is needed within this organization, both personnel-wise and management-wise. And then also Mike Sullivan, I would think, is going to want more experienced people around, or the organization should want more experienced people around Mike Sullivan so that he isn't necessarily pushing all the buttons via a surrogate who gets implanted as the GM and is just a Mike Sullivan clone or rubber stamp. So that belies what I think they need, which is a younger, more up-and-coming, analytically driven style hockey ops leader. They may end up having to go with a more known name with a stronger leadership hand at a president position, and giving the GM job to like I said, a younger, up-and-coming, more analytically driven GM. It will help this team make the changes they need to make, including stylistically at the coaching level, not necessarily firing Sullivan, but telling him, hey, you've got to do things a little bit differently if your best players are 36 and 37 years old.
Yet the older players, that core that they signed in the offseason, Letang, Malkin, and Crosby, actually were three of the top five players on the team. To me, the problem was the people they put around them was the problem, and that's why Hextall got fired, because they did not fill in the gaps around the core, and the core actually did its job.
And that's exactly what this offseason will have to be about. First and foremost, I don't want to get it wrong or mislead anybody into thinking it's not a priority. Whoever the GM is, or president of hockey ops, or whoever's ultimately calling the shots, goaltending needs to be the first priority. So I think if you're a Penguins fan, you're somewhat discouraged by the way Sullivan defended Tristan Jarry in the press conferences post-game 82, the way Tristan Jarry made excuses via his injuries. Look, nobody's not sympathetic to him trying to play through injury, but that can't be the excuse for not beating teams like Chicago or Ottawa or Montreal or San Jose down the stretch, when just one of those wins would have bolted you into the playoffs. He has not been good enough to win in the playoffs, and you need more than that with this team. You need somebody who's not just good enough to win in the playoffs, you need somebody who's good enough to maybe steal you around in the playoffs at some point. And there's nobody like that available on the free agent market this offseason, so it's going to require making a very skilled and creative trade of some sort, whether that's targeting a UC Saros in Nashville, a John Gibson in Anaheim. We all know he's a Pittsburgh native. Sure. I imagine he wouldn't necessarily be torn up about leaving the team with the first overall pick, who's in clear rebuilding mode in Anaheim, to come home.
Right.
Those are options, but it's going to take someone being very creative in that regard. And then also, oh, by the way, retaining Jason Zucker, who's probably going to get an offer of more than $5 million a year on the open market and is going to be 31 next year. Like you said, rebuilding those depth lines where you got I don't want to say zero production, but close to zero production throughout the year. That's a tall order for anybody, let alone somebody who's walking into the job, right?
Yeah. And no question. All right, draft's coming up in a little more than a week, a couple weeks, essentially. The Steelers could trade up, but what's the thought process right now? Every time I turn around, I see Joey Porter Jr.'s name linked.
Sure.
But that's not their only option. What are you thinking?
Well, I mean, offensive tackle, I think a lot of us as fans and analysts of the team have it pegged as a bigger priority than they do. Not to say that they don't think it's a need, but I don't think they look at it the same way as they look at, say, corner or even interior D-line, which is why the Jalen Carter rumors, I think, have been bubbling to the surface, and it helps when Peter King writes about it. So I think, you know, those are if you ask me to tell you what I'd like to see them do with those first three picks, where they are at 17, 32, and 49 overall, I say the template would be offensive tackle, corner, interior D lineman, in some order with those three picks. That also belies the fact that they need an inside linebacker in this draft. I mean, they went out and signed a couple of free agents, but nobody that's going to light the world on fire. So they got guys that are stopgaps, I think, Landon Roberts and the guy from Washington. That's just what I said, stopgaps at that position. So very clearly they have positions of need. I do not like the idea of trading up and possibly having to trade 17 and 32 to get to a position where you would go after Jalen Carter, as Peter King suggested in his column this morning. If Jalen Carter happens to tumble all the way to 17, I have no problem with that. Or even to, you know, into the teens, 13, 14, 15, you can move up to that spot without trading the 32nd pick. I think the 32nd pick might actually be their most valuable in this draft, because it will be the first pick of the second night, after the first round has shaken out, and they will essentially have close to 24 hours to broker with the entire league on, you know, teams that want to move up because they see somebody that's there that they don't think is going to last. They could really turn 32 into not just a good player, a possible starter, but they have a better chance, I think, to turn 32 into multiple picks that they can use to get, you know, helpful players. Maybe not day one walk into camp starters, but impact players. And again, they've got more than just two or three positions of need.
Yeah. The fact is that, you know, you mentioned 17, and then they got the Bears pick in the rather interesting. Still to this day, can't
deal
believe
at this point, right?
When they made the deal, Chris, I looked there and I said, "The heck is the Bears thinking?" It made no sense to me.
I don't know.
But they've got the pick. I mean, they have an opportunity to get pretty good pretty quick. Plus, they've already signed like a guy like Patrick Peterson, who, if they decide to draft a young corner, guess who's going to help him in the league? It's going to be him.
Oh, yeah. That's why I think it makes so much sense to take a corner, probably one of the first two picks, right? I mean, I love the idea of Joey Porter Jr. if he's there at 17. But if one of those top three tackles is also there, then I might be inclined to go tackle first and then roll the dice on a corner falling to 32. I would understand it wouldn't be Joey Porter Jr. at that point. It would be somebody else, maybe a Kelly Ringo out of Georgia, somebody sort of on that second tier of corners. But I'd be okay with that if I were the Steelers. You point out the system of support that they'll have in place around a lot of these guys, whoever they draft on defense. It's why you can envision a Jalen Carter coming to Pittsburgh and panning out because, well, there's Cam Hayward in the room, right? I mean, there's T.J. Watt in the room. There are guys that are going to be there to help bring him along. And that's why I think the corner position will work out, too, even if they don't get it at 17. And so, really, I don't know if they can screw up even just staying put at 17. The only way they screw up staying put at 17 is if there are two runs on both corners and offensive tackles that leave them standing there with neither of those positions to draft appropriate value at 17, in which case I think you trade back a few picks, maybe. You trade back into the 20s, maybe. Gain yourself another pick in day two, perhaps, and say, okay, the guys that we liked at 17 overall, they're not there. We'll bounce back. We'll have a few more picks. Maybe we get a corner at 23, and we get an offensive tackle who we understand will need a little more seasoning at 32. Maybe, again, we trade back from 32. I think they're in a very good position to move back if they want to. They're in a decent position to move up if they ultimately decide to do so. And I think that's one of the most interesting things for Steeler fans in this draft is how does Andy Weidel, coming over from Philly, how does he bring some of the things that worked in Philly the last few years where their trading for draft day positioning was impeccable? How does he bring some of those things over, some of the things he learned from Howie Roseman, and put them into practice for the Steelers? Because they've already had their busiest free agency season in ever. You know, they traditionally do not shop this much on the free agent market, even if we're talking about some second-tier guys as a part of the additions. They just don't. And so that's already the first turn we've seen away from what was a more conservative Kevin Colbert philosophy. You have Omar Khan and Andy Weidel sort of leading a charge toward, hey, we think we've got the pieces in place. Let's fill out the holes a little more aggressively.
And by the way, if you draft a corner, it doesn't mean Peterson can't play safety.
Exactly.
No, I mean, that's something to be kept in mind. Chris, it's always a pleasure, my friend. It's great to hear you.
You as well, Steve. I hope the team looked good on Saturday. I expect a full report.
Okay. I will give you a full report. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks again.